Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Turned Out of Punk Footnotes. I am one of your hosts, Damien Abraham, and your other host, as always, is my friend and your friend, Chris O'Toole. Chris, how are you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. We're just talking about how this is the first time it's ever happened live.
It's true.
And in the weirdest of weird locations.
It's true. We've made it.
Where are we, Chris?
We are in the parking lot. I'm not going to name the place, but we're in a parking lot
of a family,
of a major family tourist trap establishment.
Yep.
In Niagara Falls.
Yep.
And we've known each other now for probably more than 10 years, easy.
Yeah.
But to think that it's all come to this.
I know. This is where my worlds collide. In the parking lot of a family establishment. Yeah. Now that's where the rest of my life is forced to live now, in the parking lot outside. it's good. Thank you for coming out here
to do this.
This is kind of cool. We get to finally do one
in
person. Like we were talking about how this is like, I don't know. For me, I'm thinking this is the last podcast that I've gotten to do with, you know, a co-host. You know, I've done my other podcast with co-host live. Yep. Never got to do this one with you live.
It's true, man. I feel like it's the most punk way to do it, too, really, if you think about it in those terms.
Yeah.
It's very appropriate for, like, no-budget touring style or something.
Yep.
Sitting in a van in a parking lot on a cold November night.
Yep.
Weeknight, no less, but yeah.
Yep. Hopefully one day we can make it actually happen on tour.
Yes, hopefully.
But we do have, thankfully, the internet connection. Oh, it keeps coming and going. So we might have to do the resource on our phones tonight.
Yeah, I figure.
But I do have the whole document up here for this week's episode, and it is Jeff Cannonball from CZW, Altered Boys, Black Kites, and Urban Blight Connected, Fucked Up Connected. This will be a great episode.
How's he Fucked Up Connected?
We're label mates.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Label mates, you know?
That's right.
But we've got like a lot of stuff to get to this week. We've got some unfortunate news. We're not talking about world news, thankfully, because that would be really unfortunate.
Yeah.
But we also have some other news to get to, but yeah, first let's start off with, I guess, some bad news. We have some obituaries to get to. First and, I guess not foremost, but certainly foremost in the news here these days is the passing of Leonard Cohen.
Yeah.
Chris, I guess, like, do you have any personal connection? Like, that's the thing about Leonard Cohen. It's like, as a Canadian, you know, you seem to probably have, you know, at least a memory of where you first were exposed to the musical.
I think I have the weirdest memory, all things considered. It was Pump Up the Volume, the movie.
Oh, yeah.
He plays, I don't even know what song it is, actually, but he plays a Leonard Cohen song, I think, when him and the girl he's infatuated with eventually have sex in the movie.
Oh.
And I remember that vividly, not because of the sex thing, but I just remember it being like, or actually, no, it's when he starts his show doesn't he start his show with a Leonard Cohen song every time?
You have to get fact-checked.
Everybody knows. I think that's...
Oh, he does it? Yeah, that would make sense.
I think maybe I'm confusing, but everybody knows. Anyway, there's some Leonard Cohen song in that movie that has always stood out for me. So that was my first recollection of it. And I think, you know, in years since, it's weird. Like, I always dislike... Well, I dislike when these people pass because I liked what they did. But I always find, like, in recent years, there's been a few I haven't, like, gotten majorly into, and I feel bad. Like, Leonard Cohen, I know I love, I'm guessing, about 90% of his catalog, but I've probably heard maybe 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I don't have any, like, huge personal thing. Obviously, I know, like, the albums people know, but tend to know, that is.
Mm-hmm.
Songs of Love and Hate, things like that, but no, not really. I don't have any major association, other than thinking he was cool, and, yeah, I don't know. You?
My friend Simon Ennis played me the tribute record. It was like that tribute record to Leonard Cohen that came out in the, I guess, early 90s.
Okay.
Maybe late 80s? No, or probably early 90s.
I don't remember that. Okay.
Oh, let's get the resource.
Let's get the phones on already. I remember seeing something, I don't know if it was attached to that, but I remember seeing a live performance And it was a bunch of different artists. I remember Jarvis Cocker was one, and they were covering different Coen songs.
This might have been prior to that, but maybe not. Like, that's the thing about Pulp. They've been around forever, right?
This would have been, no, this was like post, like Pulp kind of being done or whatever.
Oh, okay, then so no, this would have been before that.
It would have been within the last decade. I'm assuming what you're talking about isn't connected, but anyway. But yeah, Leonard Cohen, obviously, you know, major influence on probably a good segment of the people that we were influenced by in one way or another.
Yeah, like I'm trying to remember, is it called like I'm Your Man?
Could be, that would make sense.
Yeah.
If you can picture two dudes in a van with frosted windows phones. Just hitting up the phones.
There's a security guard patrolling around here, so we might get a knock on the window wondering what we're doing.
Yeah.
Just podcasting, sir. Don't mind us.
Yeah, I don't know that comp, though, surprisingly. I don't remember this.
Oh, man.
That does sound like something that would be very 90s.
Yeah, it was. It had, like, it had R.E.M., or at least Michael Stipe doing Then We Take Berlin. It had, I don't fucking know.
Either way, but yeah.
It's way harder to search on your phone than it is on the computer, right?
Yeah, it's the resources interface on the phone is not as lovely.
No, it's not. To say. It's not really as user-friendly. Let's see if we can get this on. But anyway, Leonard Cohen, certainly a real tragic passing, and something that, as I say, in Canada right now, certainly has been brought up a lot in the news. And, it goes to show, like, the impact. Like, a couple years ago, my wife, Lauren, who's asleep right now, a few hundred feet away, she and her family went to that, and then, like, she ran, I think her mom went one night, and then her dad went another night, they're divorced, and then her aunt and uncle went another night. Like, it's just, like, everyone kind of went in her family to go see Leonard Cohen on that last run.
I never saw him. Did you see him?
God, yeah, I think I did. You know, this sounds terrible that I can't remember, but I'm pretty sure I saw him at a festival, but, you know, it was very brief if I did, and unfortunately way too late at night. No, this is not going to run on my computer. Anyway, I guess we should move on to the next passing, but that is a real tragic loss, Leonard Cohen, and, you know, if you're in Canada, our Prime Minister has definitely acknowledged the passing of him, and I think has led the eulogy, or is doing... It's just leading tributes.
Yeah. But sad day. It's funny how many people, though, I don't think associate him with being Canadian, though.
Really? You think people don't?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's one of these people that seem to transcend that notion of just being the Canadian, you know, whatever, poet, singer guy.
I don't know. That dude is, like, so Montreal.
I know. We it's feel crazy. That way, but yeah, I feel like the outside world doesn't think of him in those terms. It's just kind of interesting to see. The sort of eulogizing of him, and it's sort of coming out more in the news.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Because I don't think I... When I first heard of him, I don't think I knew that he was Canadian up until, like, I started looking into him a little bit.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I always associate him with that, but I think that depends how you're introduced to an artist. But I could see how, you know... I don't know. I think you're probably right. No, I don't know. Do you think Neil Young's considered more Canadian than Leonard Cohen? Like, by the average person? Because, like, American people are always like, oh, Neil Young's Canadian
to me. Yeah, and I'm like, I don't know what it is. For some reason, that stuck with him. I don't know if it's because more of people like Neil Young or Randy Bachman or those types always tended to, like, fly the flag. I'm not sure Leonard Cohen is known for that as much. Maybe that's why it's not associated to him.
Yeah, I guess it comes up in Leonard Cohen's music more, though. Like, Montreal references. And he got, like, started so much later. Like, I think he lived in Montreal a lot longer than... Neil Young lived in Canada.
I don't know. I mean, I could be off base. I just thinking from myself personally, I never realized he was Canadian until after knowing who he was. And then being, you know, like foolishly happy that he was, thinking like we have another amazing person coming from this country.
Yeah, well, you would not have that question right now. Because certainly not letting you forget that he might be at one point Canadian.
Yes.
In the Canadian news media. So
there's another passing as well, though.
Yes, rest in peace, Leonard Cohen.
Yes,
A really sad a really sad passing. All speaking of sad passings, though, Norton Records' Billy Miller has also passed away. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with Norton Records, they are a label, I don't know, beyond belief when it comes to putting out music. Like, oh God, the Real Kids, the reissues that they've done, like the careers they've kind of like helped relaunch. And it's a label that, you know, by all accounts, you know, paid the artists because no one really tried to take their records away from them, from what I've heard and seen and stuff. So, sad to hear this passing.
Kix Magazine too, Dictators.
Yep.
Sonics. There's a lot of people who've put up some really nice things if you look on social media, if you search the hashtag Billy Miller. But yeah, I'm a fan of this kind of stuff. I mean, I'm sure most people in some regard, and you and I, of course, are, but
yeah, like
a lot more people we know are definitely fans of this kind of whatever that is.
I don't think you can be like a, you know, like a real, not a real, but like, I don't think you're a collector, but most people who are record collectors, I think, would have a Norton record.
Yeah.
Wait. Whether they know it or not.
Yeah.
You know, there's just like so much stuff that Norton's kind of like put out or helped see the light of day. Yeah.
I believe they also, did they not reissue The Crusher by the Novas?
I believe they did. You're right. And they also, I think, did that Velvet Underground box set a couple years ago. Was it Sundays?
Honestly, though, I never got to go to the store. Did you ever get to go to the store?
In New York?
Yeah.
No.
Which is kind of crazy that you haven't been, I think.
I'm trying to think if, how long ago was that opened, though?
It's still open now, I think. It's in Brooklyn, I think.
Yeah, no, I don't think I ever got to go. I've been to, like, a lot of stores in Brooklyn, too. But I guess it's one of those things where if you're not, like, right by a store, you're there for such a short period of time normally. Yeah. You know, a couple of weeks ago when we were on tour, it was amazing because when we were in, like, Springfield, Massachusetts, Maryland.
Yeah.
Springfield, Maryland? Anyway. The suburb of Washington, D.C. area.
Yeah.
There were, like, two record stores within walking distance of the venue.
Nice. Like, perfect.
Yeah, it's awesome. But, like, rarely does that happen, right? Normally you get one.
Yep.
But, no, I didn't get a chance to go to the Norton Record Store, but I'm a big fan of it. And, a collector's collector when it comes to records. So, rest in peace, Billy Miller. And I'm sure you can go out there and pick up some Norton records if you haven't picked up Norton records before and find out some incredible music that, you know, Billy played a part in helping see the light of day.
There you go.
So I guess now with the awkward transition, if you want to get in touch with us over here, Chris, how do they do that?
turnoutapunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
Awesome. And also you can check out all the cool stuff that we get sent in on this to the show over on Facebook, facebook.com/turnoutapunk. And it's run by my brother, Tristan Abraham. And you're a friend now, Chris. You've never really met him in real life.
Right? Ironically, I've not, no.
No. Well, you guys have been in the same room. You guys have been in the same room before.
Maybe it'll be in a van in 10 years from now in a parking lot.
Probably. He'll be with me, too. I think actually we might be dragging him here for over the holidays.
That'd be funny. If that's the case,
we'll have to do one. That'd be funny. But you can also check out over at turnoutapunk.tumblr.com. We have a Tumblr page where we post stuff if you don't use Facebook, because, you know, there's some people in this world that don't use Facebook at this point, myself included. But if you do use Facebook, you might have heard about this. There is going to be a Turned at a Punk Northeast American tour coming out. That's right. You're going to be able to see this podcast, not this podcast. Well, hopefully this podcast. Hopefully, yeah. Fingers crossed, this very podcast. But the Turned at a Punk podcast live, hot on the heels of the successful, I'm going to call it successful. We'll wait till Dave comes on in a couple weeks to really describe it as successful or not. But I think it was successful, but hot on the heels of a successful debut of Turned Out of Punk in Austin, Texas at Sound on Sound Festival. Turned Out of Punk is coming to you if you live in one of four cities on the American East Coast. We're going to be in on December the 12th, Monday, the Great Scott in Allston, Massachusetts. December 13th, Tuesday at the Black Cat in Washington, D.C. December the 14th, Wednesday, Johnny Brenda's in Philadelphia. The next day, December the 15th, at Rough Trade in Brooklyn, New York, finishing off the tour. And as I mentioned, Chris, hopefully you're going to be able to join us.
I'm working my hardest to make that happen.
We're gonna figure that out. But we've got some hot guests that are going to be announced soon. You can go over to DamienAbraham.com, and there's a, like, I think it's the tour, Tope Live. Click on that, and you can buy tickets.
Yeah.
You know, please come out and check it out. I'm going to have some hot guests for you, I promise. I got some good plans. Got some big, big, big plans for this thing. Okay, Chris, let's get on to today's episode. Mailbag, I guess, right? Yeah. Okay, mailbag first.
This is actually a column. So this is like, there's a whole bunch here. So this is one of our column contributors, our Norwegian correspondent, as I've affectionately titled.
Yeah, Cal, are we just going to do this? I guess we have to do this 10-inch thing.
We have
now.
The 10-inches. He's got some, there was some other stuff he sent in too, but the 10-inches we kind of said we'd do this week.
Do we say we do the 10-inches this week?
There's a bunch that people have sent in.
Yeah, there's a bunch. So this is going to be... Excuse me. Are you sure you want to do the 10-inches this week, Chris? Because also Discogs is running a little clunky.
All right, yeah, maybe we should save that for the resource is running in full.
Yeah, because we don't have full resource capacity. What we're trading in connectivity right now, we're gaining in camaraderie.
Yeah, it is. I will say, number six, I'm definitely with big time, Kel, into that. We'll get to that another week.
Well, there's so much stuff that's worth talking on this. This is going to be an amazing thing to get through. Yeah, this will be incredible. Okay, Cal, yeah, we'll get to that next week.
So this is regarding the anarcho-punk. He sent in stuff in regards to that article with Neurosis from last week.
Oh, yeah, we sent in that. Cal sent in last week a article where it was Neurosis picking their favorite peace punk songs. Was that it?
It was like or anarcho-punk songs. Bands, yeah. More or less.
And that was a cool piece, but... Kel's comment on it is just a comment on the Discharge thing. I've always considered them as an originator, as a disband, OG Kang band, or what we call it now, D-Beat. I have tried to make my fave top 10 or 18 as they got to, in the end, top anarcho-punk bands. But then what's a label? It's punk in the end. Fave anarcho UK punk bands. The positions on this list is fluid according to my state of mind, but I really love those bands. Okay.
Well, here you go. So okay. We got 1 to 10, I think, on this.
So I guess we should go 10 to 1, right? That's how you do these. Or 18.
18.
18.
All right. Okay, go 18.
Alternative?
Never got an alternative. I don't know that one.
I like alternative. Anthrax, not to be confused with
American Anthrax,
yeah. But yes, an incredible band.
Solid, yep.
Morbid Humor, I don't think I know Morbid Humor.
Don't know that one either.
Dirt, I like Dirt. I love Dirt even more because there's a picture of Ewan wearing a Dirt shirt that I remember as a kid. So that's how I think I got into Dirt. From seeing him wear that photo, but it was when he had dreadlocks, and I think it was like forbidden knowledge back then to see that photo.
Wow.
It was in a Max Rock and Roll. And Anti-System.
14, yeah.
Okay, Cal, we can already eliminate one from your list because you have Morbid Humor twice on your list.
I never noticed that. Yeah,
the number 13, Morbid Humor again. Number 12, The Mob.
The UK Mob.
Yeah, both are incredible.
Yeah.
But I do love that UK Mob. Omega Tribe, yes, a great Chumbawamba, as we discussed last week and went into some detail. Yeah. But Conflict, I would have said Conflict higher, but that's maybe just me.
Yeah.
Icons of Filth, incredible. Anti-Sect, of course. Rudiment, once again, I would say for me they would have been higher. Rudimentary Peni would have been higher for me. Zounds, Flux of Pink Indians, I would say Subhumans, and then Poison Girls, and then Crass.
Yeah.
So, I would have my top 10 be a little different, but that's fluid.
Chris, solid list.
Great list. Great list.
I would have picked, I mean, my 1-3 probably would have been, well, he doesn't have Discharge on here, but.
Well, yeah, because he was saying Discharge is different to him, right?
Yeah.
It's a Kang band or a Dis band or a D-beat.
Yeah. Either way, interesting. He has some non-ones too, non-UK versions, like bands as well, but.
Well, who's non-UK?
If you go down next.
Oh, yeah, yeah, sorry, there's more. UK, sorry, favorite non-UK anarcho-punk-ish peace punk bands. Crucifix from the US. Yeah.
Incredible.
Godly. Yeah. Angerwatt from Norway. I kind of like it. I don't think it's like a later Angerwatt record. Maybe it's a different Angerwatt that's not very good. But then I know I've heard stuff by this Angerwatt. I don't know. State of Mind, Christ on Parade, Iconoclast, Angola Gay, Enola Gay, sorry.
Yeah.
Dondar, Tin Can Army, and then favorite non-anarcho-punk release on an anarcho-punk label, Captain Sensible, This Is Your Captain Speaking, 7-inch, Honeybane, Violence Grows. I would say the Honeybane is my number one, 100%. Fitz, Tears of a Nation, and then MDC, Multi-Death Corporations. And just to say, I haven't forgotten Amoebix, Instigators of Civilized Society, but they're also bits out of my, in my book.
There you go.
I don't know. I would include Amoebix on my list, I guess. But I guess we're late.
Very thorough, though, for people who are not familiar with a lot of this stuff. You can pretty much go off that, and then you're good to roll.
You're set. You're set in your anarcho toolbox.
So we have another massive column this week, depending on what you want to get to.
We're going to skip the 10 inches. We're going to skip the 10 inches.
So there's the Misfits material, which we have. This is our American, one of our American correspondents, Dave Martin, as always. He sent it 10 inches, which we'll do another week, as it turns out.
But yeah,
Misfits stuff I thought was really good. Because I thought he... You want me to do it? Sure.
Yeah, do you want to take this one?
Sure, I can read it for you.
I got it.
First, in regards to the Misfits...
Ah, what did I do? I'm sorry,
Damien,
Chris,
just
fucked it all up.
Damien just...
I hacked into the internet. Okay, there we go.
All right, so it was the other week, the interview you had with Doyle and his wife, girlfriend? I don't know if they're married.
I think they're married.
Anyway, it kind of spawned things regarding the Misfits. So... we were having some discussion amongst the contributors to the podcast, so to speak. But Dave had a lot of really good things to say about the Misfits.
Yeah, an editorial meeting.
Editorial meeting.
The editorial meeting behind the scenes.
I will submit that it's not everything on this I do not agree with, but I thought the summary was very good, so we'll just go through and kind of say it. So Misfits stuff. First, they did not have a solid lineup and did not play outside of the New York City area. No matter what, for a band to really be successful and crack that mass consciousness, they have to play in front of people, a lot of people. And Damien's got a scroll here for me. The Misfits don't have a solid touring lineup until the early 80s when the initial wave of punk rock was over. So that's his first point. Second, the records. They didn't have a full-length record out until Walk Among Us in 82. Which might as well be forever in comparison to the 1977 or 78 releases. The records that people know, think of as essential, like Static Age or Legacy of Brutality, did not exist. They are late 80s and early 90s creations where Glenn went back and assembled and re-recorded in many instances a sort of what should have been or something like that. So the only thing people had were the singles, if they were lucky enough to find them. There was also a double-edged sword of Glenn keeping everything on Plan 9. No doubt a bigger label would have pushed more records out, issued a full length a lot earlier, but they were just not to that point yet. If you look at what is considered one of the best American punk records of the late 70s, the Real Kids' first LP, in contrast, I guess, the record was obscure, and it wasn't until Norton reissued it, until people started to call it a classic record. If you look at where it resides today, you realize that it's still considered going deep. So that was his second point. Anyway, in my stupid mind, I refuse to consider any record that is a compilation or issued posthumously a real record, so that leaves only Walk Among Us and Earth AD to consider. Walk Among Us is great, pretty much perfect, even Brain Eaters. Earth AD is not in the same league, but I have listened to it so many times in my life that I probably don't have the most objective opinion about it beyond this. It could probably have been much, much better. Funny aside, but yeah, we don't need to go into this bit. But anyway, that was the... Skip that paragraph.
Yep.
The, yeah, he said, okay, having said that, everyone needs a copy of Static Age and both collections, ASAP, as well as Walk Among Us and Legacy of Brutality. If you have less than 5 Misfits LPs, you're doing it wrong. So I definitely am doing it wrong, according to Dave Martin, but proudly, might I add. Third, touring. By the time the Misfits had a solid lineup and could tour, only real avenue was American DIY Circuit that puts them smack dab in the middle of hardcore, which sort of takes them out of consideration for any big labor interests. Fourth, behind / ahead of the times. The whole image thing was so over the top that had nowhere to exist except for punk rock. Even if they had major label backing, the band's image and aesthetic were so foreign to almost everyone at the time, it would have been money wasted, or worse, someone would have been pushing to update and modernize it. The people who liked old horror / sci-fi movies, etc., were the weirdos. Astro Zombies is a galaxy away from Jamie's Crying or even Highway to Hell. Fifth, Glenn, well, we don't have to go into this. Basically, it just talks about Glenn's personality being a bit of a buffer. But that's in conclusion to what Dave said. I thought it was pretty, it kind of covers all bases in my world. But what do you think of that there, Dave?
Well, is that in regards to Misfits, the greatest punk band, not at all a punk band thing, I think?
It was sort of about that. It was sort of,
I also think that there are Misfits records that were out there. They're like one of the most bootleg bands of all time.
Yeah.
And but that might be later on too. So, yeah, like I guess, like, you know, that's kind of the point I was making last week, right?
I think what I liked about him saying all this was that, especially in regards to the early material, where he basically talks about the Misfits that people tend to know now and eulogize, was not necessarily the way the Misfits' trajectory actually was. So you have to view it with a different light if you really want to break down how the Misfits' legacy exists.
I don't know if you do though, because it's still like it's the three dudes.
You're right. I just think, though, idea of the posthumous release thing, I guess, is important.
Yeah, like, you're right, like, maybe in their, like, legacy, but I think that's, like, you know, and maybe Glenn, like you're saying, Glenn re-recorded a lot of that stuff and things like that, but, like, I still think it's, like, the three dudes the whole way through. Like, there's a continuity in that band.
Yeah.
More than in Career Suicide.
Yes, of course.
You know, we're gonna really get into the nitty gritty of this thing.
Yeah.
You know.
Anyway, that was the column from Dave this week. Excellent as always. Yeah. Thank you, Dave.
We're going to have to get Michael's email next week, Michael P's email next week, because it is great, but unfortunately we're doing the 10 inches next week.
Yeah.
And did we do this last week?
We didn't do it. This was the, we can get into this or not. We had another message, or we could shelf this, whatever you want to do. There's a few in here that go both ways based on our off the grid thing here.
Yeah, why don't we go into this next one. Okay. For this week.
Best live band. Take it, Damien.
Best live band. Howdy from Texas. So I'd like to put forth that At the Drive-In are the best live band ever. Okay. They always sound lively and in tune, even when they are thrashing about the stage. Secondly, Cedric has a very strong screaming and singing voice to this day, and is also an incredibly nice and humble person, who I built a weird friendship with at one point for Best Live Acts, Cro-Mags. I saw them in August here in San Antonio, and they were fantastic. Still a lot of energy for guys in their mid-50s. They played all of Age of Coral and some of the Bad Brains covers thrown in there to make everyone lose their shit. Side note on the topic of punishing musicians at festivals. Last year at FFF Fest, fun, fun, fun festival, I met Sandy from Fucked Up, and I'm pretty sure I came off as a punisher, asking a ton of questions while my glasses were broken and hanging off my face. Sorry, Sandy, but thank you, Sandy, for dealing with an overly excited nerd from Texas. Thanks for the podcast. It's been great. But come on, let's get the part twos. Your friend, John. Well, John, there have been a couple part twos.
There have been, yeah.
I have another part two done that's just waiting to drop. And nice. I actually spoke to the person who's featured in this cartoon. He's like, when are you going to put my episode out? And I'm like, I'm putting it out really soon.
Pressure's on.
I know, but I just like, there's a lot of stuff that's come up, and I want to save that one for a good week. But yeah, no, it's coming up. So there are part twos coming up. MVP has kind of been on three times now.
Yeah. But there was part two early on. Papalardo's is two.
Is two, episodes. Yeah. That one, that's not, he's actually got to come on for a legit part two.
Yeah.
There's also Davey Havoc.
Yeah, that's right.
There's also Nate, Converge Nate.
Yep. He's talking about it twice. There's a few. So based on what the subject matter, though, of this message was, best live band.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm respectfully going to disagree.
I'm going to respectfully disagree as well.
But they are a good live band. I'm not saying they're not a good live band. They are a very good live band, or at least in their prime. I was able to see them in their prime once, and they were excellent. But
I saw them on the Gilman, just right before that first Fearless record came out.
I like how I mentioned a story, and then Damien just one-ups me. Right.
Well.
I'm like, I saw them on Relationship Command in Toronto. Or I didn't even say that, but that's when I saw them. But, yeah, David's like, I saw them in El Paso.
No, I saw them, just because I happened to be at the Gilman visiting my friend who was going to school down there at the time and took in the show. I think it was a really weird bill. Like, I think it was them. Oh, gosh. There was that weird Krishna band on Chapter One Records.
You got me here, man. I don't know.
And then there was... that was a very bizarre bill. Fat Day might have played too. Trial was a Trial and At the Drive-In. Might have been Trial and At the Drive-In. Anyway, it was a show.
But good live band, not one of my personal favorites, but they were very good live.
They were fantastic. I don't know, best live band of all time.
That's a hard. First of all, it's hard to make that distinction.
So hard.
I like that you mentioned the Cro-Mags. They're consistently an excellent live band.
I would say John Joseph's probably one of my favorite front people of all time.
Yeah, and I've never seen like. "Quote unquote," the real Cro-Mags. Even
I never saw the the "quote unquote," capital C. Cro-Mags.
I haven't seen the three. Seen the three, like
the big three together.
Yeah, exactly. That's what you need to me. Like, I get that we've all seen the Cro-Mags. It's like Cro-Mags light. But if you haven't seen the big three, then you haven't really seen it.
Yeah. Well, still, no, I don't know. Like at this point. Like, would you want to see the big three?
Yes.
Would you want to see the three together?
Yes.
I don't know.
I would.
I prefer John and the others.
Well, I liked what I've seen, and I'll probably watch them again another 10 times.
But
I will say, just when if we're comparing apples to apples here, I think the big three need to be considered if you're really holding them up.
I think John,
it'll never happen. I don't think it'll ever happen.
That'll never happen. But I think back to talking about the Cro-Mags as far as a live band. So, yeah, the Cro-Mags version that I've seen is one of my favorite live bands I've ever seen. Avail, back in the... back.
Never saw Avail.
Oh, my God. Those are some good shows. I
think they're really great live bands.
Dillinger 4.
Never saw them either. Great band, though.
I'm trying to think of other... Great live bands, like bands where you're just like...
I'm going to shout out one, since it's a Texas person who wrote in, and I've seen two incarnations of bands from this group. Marked Men, incredible live, and I saw Radioactivity recently as well, and they were also incredible.
I just saw Radioactivity too the other day.
Really good.
And they were fucking awesome.
Yeah, Marked Men for me, recording-wise, are next level, so I enjoy them more, but...
Marked Men have a couple songs where I'm like, that might be one of the best pop punk songs ever. Oh, dude,
so good. So... In the light of Texas shout-outs here, I'm going to say Markman over At the Drive-In all day.
I would say At the Drive-In over Markman. Like, if I'm just saying pure live, like, I'm not saying, like, songs or records I'm going to listen to. I'm just saying, like, live energy-wise.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, like if I'm going, if I'm just going live energy-wise, like, bands where I'm just like, that is, holy shit, when you leave the show, you're just like, wow. Stooges. Trash Talk. Like, I've seen some Trash Talk shows where I'm like, that was the most ridiculous thing I've seen in my life. Like, just like, how, what did they do? You can't do that.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to
do that. I think there's different criteria too, because there's just like proficiency in bands and then there's just spectacle. And if you marry both, it's great. But for me, it's like, there are bands that I would say, like, I could name you, what I feel are, like, the best live bands in the last 10 years. I'm sure people would disagree with me, but they'd be mostly punk hardcore bands in terms of, like, that. Like, if I were to name a band like Hoax. Hoax, to me, were one of the best live bands in the last 5-10 years. But it's not everyone's cup of tea. Mm-hmm. Similar to, like, early Fucked Up, you bashing your head in, like, or I don't know if you still do that. I guess maybe you do.
No, of course not so much.
So what I mean is there's aspects, like, it depends on what you're into. Because like, on the opposite end of the spectrum, like, Fugazi were one of the best live bands I've ever seen also. So, and it's a totally different can of worms.
It's a lot like At the Drive-In.
Have you ever seen that? Fugazi, absolutely.
I was on a message board one time and someone took these two videos and put them back to back and they're like, which is worse? And it's just two videos of like the bands just like lecturing for an unbelievable amount of time. The kids that crowd surfed. Like, just like unbelievable. Like, obviously, if you do that at a Fugazi show, like,
yeah,
fuck, you get what you deserve because you've been forewarned at this point. But like, also, at the same time, it's like, oh, come on. Do you need to shame this person, like, for, like, 20
they
minutes?
They didn't, there was no lectures when I saw them. But I will say, just as a live entity, they were fantastic and like, next level. I know they're not Damien's favorite thing in the world, but...
Yeah, the driving one was amazing. The guys are, like, tagging off. Like, just like, if I tag out, get on this dude for a bit. I need to just catch my breath and get a sip of water. And then, like, the other guy's like, yeah, fuck this guy for crowd surfing. Wow. Get the fuck out of here.
I wasn't aware that they were that kind of band. I never saw... I've saw them too.
When I saw them, they were not like that. But, like, you know, bands go through different...
Yeah, yeah.
Their vibes change, obviously.
Yep.
As the aforementioned head bashing.
But, yeah, anyway, great topic. I'm sure people will write in. Feel free to write in best live bands. I'm sure we will...
Stooges, the day they stand out, when the day we play with them, after they had all their gear ripped off in Montreal the night before, they were, oh my God.
I'm sure most bands that are iconic in some regard in their day, you know, if you lined them up, yeah, obviously, like, hearing the Stooges makes perfect sense. Like, they were excellent, of course. Mm-hmm. Like, I never got a chance to see them. I almost went that day that you played with them, but anyway, I did. Great band, though, yeah, of course.
You fucked up. You
we
fucked
can skip
up.
This one here because it's 10 inches and a bunch of other stuff.
Yeah,
so,
10 inches.
This one here. Yeah, this one. Take this one. Or was this me? Do I take this one?
I think so.
All right. Subject, Seth Rollins and Wonder Years from Michael K. I was hanging out with a friend recently and watching a Seth Rollins wrestling match, and they told me that Seth had done a stint as a merch guy for the pop punk band Wonder Years during the several times they had seen the band. I'm not sure that it was a common knowledge. His stage name implies that he is probably a punk, but I thought it was funny. Funny little punk wrestling intersection. So, Damien, there you go.
No, I'm friends with the guys in the Wonder Years, and yeah, I don't know if he did merch for them. I gotta ask them about that, but like, I know he would go to their shows and like bust crazy dives off the stage and stuff. And yeah, he got his name from Henry Rollins.
Oh, okay.
So, believe me. Oh my gosh, believe me. I'm on that trail.
Nice.
Okay, next email. this is from
Jesse L.
Simply Saucer versus Teenage Head. I'm a longtime fan of Taupe and the author of the Simply Saucer biography, Heavy Metalloid Music.
Yeah.
I'll be out later this month for Eternal Cavalier Press, so I was excited to hear you talk about them during this week's footnotes. There's a quasi-rivalry between Simply Saucer and Teenage Head, both in a friendly competitive sense from the shows they played together in the 70s and due to early Head member Steve Sparky Park going on to join Saucer years later. The father of Edgar Burrow and Frankie Venom also worked together as guards at a jail in Hamilton. Hamilton. That's a city. The song he quoted for lyrics from was I Was a Rock and Roll Droog, a.k.a. The Story of Simply Saucer. It's actually from the new 2LP Rarities compilation, Saucerland. I know Dave also...
Yeah, Dave Martin.
...was pissed at Chris and I for not knowing.
It's revoked, like, our citizenship.
Yeah. It's like, sorry, Dave, just got the first press of that thing. I contribute liners to that one as well. Three more quick points. One, Simply Saucer has one of those superstar lineups you mentioned, like Career Suicide. Mike Triplecock from the Killjoys play guitar and Theremin. Oh, the Canadian Killjoys.
Yeah.
Today, to everyone. And, well, that's crazy. I didn't know that. And then Glenn Milcom.
I think it says, yeah, I'm reading it wrong.
From Blue Rodeo, plays drums. They sound fantastic. When Glenn is unavailable, I've been honored to have the opportunity of filling in on drums with Simply Saucer at some of the upcoming launch events for my book. Has a biographer ever done that before?
That's a good question. I don't know. The only things I think of with stuff like that is like that, what was it, the Germs movie, the guy
Shane West
actually sang for them and stuff like that. I don't know.
That's how I got my germs burned.
That's right.
It's Shane West.
Yeah. He's got a third point here really quick.
Not from Shane West. I've never met Shane West.
Yeah.
No, here's a cool, nice person. He did have his teeth lasered to look like Darby's.
Wow. Jesus.
That's like, you know what, like I would love if someone did like one of those shows, like I had 300 plastic surgeries to look just like Barbie. You know, it's like, yeah. I had my teeth lasered to look like
Darby Crash.
Wow. He also has the same tattoos done, too, right?
Jeez.
And he says, Cyborgs Revisited is the best Canadian album of all time.
It's definitely in contention. I don't know if... I still don't know if I agree with that, but they're an excellent band.
Yeah, but then it comes up to Dave's thing. Is it like a posthumous release, right?
I suppose, yeah.
It's definitely one of the most significant records. Probably the most significant, you know, record of all time as far as documenting my... much cherished belief that, or shared belief with a lot of people, that punk kind of starts at the same point all over the place.
Yeah.
You know.
Either way.
Early 70s, mid 70s. But yeah, I can't wait to read that book. This is going to be a good book. So when is that coming out?
You said at the beginning there. Later this month, so November.
Yeah.
On, what is it, Eternal Cavalier Press. But yeah, thanks, Jesse, for the message. Great info.
Yeah, pick it up, and then I guess pick up that new Rarities comp.
I don't think that's that new. I think that's been out for a little while.
I said it's new. New Double LP.
Okay, well.
From the new Double LP Rarities compilation, right. Saucerland.
I think it's a few years old, I think. Well, anyway.
New-ish.
Yeah.
Yeah, Chris. Yes.
Stickler.
Yeah.
More Misfits.
More Misfits. More for you, Chris.
Yes. It's funny that I'm reading the Misfits stuff tonight. Anyway, sorry. Daniel B. writes in, Misfits / UK Euro comps. I want to get the opinion of Damien and I on Samhain, the other Danzig band.
It's pronounced differently, eh?
Is it?
Yeah, it's like, as well as, like, that's what I just found out. Like, Tim Kerr was saying it's like, some Hawker or something like that. It's like weird. Some like Gaelic pronunciation, but anyway, go on.
Well, Sam Haynes.
I know, that's what I've been calling it.
They just don't ever seem to get mentioned, and I personally think their first album, Initium, is excellent, and is just outright better than some of the later Misfits stuff, no less. Metal. And a lot less party metal than Danzig. Also, I wanted to add some UK Euro. Okay, well, first of all, let's stop there for a minute.
Sure.
Feelings on Samhain.
I love Samhain.
Me too.
You know, like, I don't know. I think they kind of get sandwiched between, you know, they're just like a bridge band for a lot of people.
Yeah. I think my dickish opinion forever, and I still am clinging to it, is that I like Samhain more than the Misfits, just because it tends to upset people that I feel that way.
Yeah, but, I can see, but that's just like, you know.
But I do like Initium a lot, and I like November Coming Fire a lot, too. And the artwork on those records is phenomenal also. But, yeah, I don't know, like, to me, it's clearly the band that, you know, formed in the wake of something like the Misfits, so I don't think it would have existed if the Misfits hadn't existed. So it does owe the Misfits for being great in and of itself, in my opinion, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's my take on it. But yeah, I like that someone mentioned this first, because we have not talked about that much on this show ever, really.
No, it hasn't come up. Like, I don't think it's like a lack of wanting to talk about it, but it just hasn't come up.
Yeah.
We also haven't talked about Rosemary's Babies at all.
True.
Now okay. There's some punk comps.
Yeah, another round of golf is one here. I don't know this comp.
There's five volumes of it.
But I suppose we should go over these with the resource too. Never thought of this.
Yeah, we should go look up. We should use this for the resource.
Well, we're gonna try. Like, I'm gonna try more specifically to get and start to really get to these comps in time for like Christmas, New Year. So, yeah, we're gonna get to that. We'll get to that on another episode, and we will do the 10 inches next week when we're not off the grid.
So if you've got someone you don't know what to get them for the holidays this year, just get them a card and write in it in, like, letters. Like, turned out a punk has finally gotten to the comps.
Yeah, pretty much.
And it'll be set. They won't want anything else.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, on to today's episode. Jeff Cannonball.
Yep.
I wish you had seen the doc before we recorded this.
Yeah, script. I haven't seen it yet still.
No, it's not out yet. It comes out tomorrow.
Yeah. I'll be watching it.
It's going to be... It is truly, like, I think, actually, now that you've heard this podcast and you'll see it, this thing, you'll kind of have the same experience that I had, you know, watching this all go down with Jeff.
All right.
During TOD.
What might be the bad thing, though, is that his personality has been revealed.
But that's what it was when I saw him. I knew his personality, which made it all the more fucked up.
Crazy. Okay.
Because it's like, it's not like, if I hadn't met him, I'd be like, oh, that guy must just be like some really nutso, yeah. You know, yeah. Like deathmatch, like warrior guy.
Yeah, yeah. You wouldn't assume that he would be
like a best right? show yeah. loving,
yeah.
You know, record collecting, you know, like.
Yeah, totally. I looked up photos too because I was like, I wonder if I know what this guy looks like even at all. And photos came up with his shirt or whatever, like the tear it up thing.
Yeah.
And like, I didn't really, like, I was assumed when you said he lifted the tear it up thing that it was like an homage or something. It's like directly the image.
He got their permission.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah, they were like,
I was like, holy, man. Like, it's exactly the image. I thought it would be like, I don't know, some homage, but
nope.
Kind of neat.
They also, his new shirt is a Last House on, wait for it, Dead End Street flip.
I don't know that one.
It's like the most obscure. It's like this art house gore movie by this would be future porn movie director about a failed art house film director who makes a snuff movie.
Weird.
It's like a Charles Manson thing. But it's like the most obscure horror movie to do a flip shirt of. It was like, it looks so crazy. It looks so good. So if you are in the market for a new long sleeve shirt that looks awesome, go check out Jeff's shirt because it is for sale now. And he's got a sale. He's got a special sale that if you put in the code TOPE, you get $5 off the shirt.
There you go.
Shirt. So
nice.
There you go.
So what's his website, though? If you just search Jeff Cannonball.
Yeah, Jeff Cannonball. It's on his Twitter. He's got it on his Twitter. So go to his Twitter.
Yeah.
So he's on Twitter.
There you go. So what point do you want to bring up here first? Let's see. I think, Phil, you should navigate this.
Okay, well, I guess, like, I want to bring up the first thing, because when I first found out about Jeff, the first thing that perked me up was hearing Plastic Bomb.
Yeah, I like that. It's a great choice for intro music.
What would be your wrestling intro music? Ooh, or your or Chris, because, like, that's the thing. You're not a big wrestling guy.
No, I am. I'm more...
an MMA guy.
No. I'm more...
You were an MMA guy for a while.
Not really, no.
Really,
I like anything like that, but...
What was that one where it was like, what's his name? The Huntington Beach Bad Boy versus some guy. And we watched it. We were going to watch it.
We did? I don't know.
You wanted to watch it. You watched it, and then I was going to watch it with you, but then it didn't happen.
I can't remember. I used to be... weirdly, MMA is similar to wrestling. I was into those things early. So, like, yeah. I watched the first... whatever the hell they were. I don't even know if it was UFC then. Whatever it was, those first two or three.
The first was UFC.
Yeah, and so when you had to, like, fight multiple times per night.
Yeah,
and all
it was
that
a tournament
stuff.
Round.
So similar to wrestling, like, I checked out. I saw the Attitude Era of wrestling, but I kind of checked out for good probably after that. I can't think of anything I've seen in recent years.
The Attitude Era, like, was probably wrestling at its most popular. And there was
but that was the end
great
point.
Stuff.
Like, I had given up a bit, but came back in Attitude Era, and then I was out again.
It's kind of like considered for like wrestling, like a low point.
Yeah, I could, like, for me...
popularity-wise is the biggest point.
Well, I liked when WCW still existed, and then the point when it folded, yep. I just got... That's when it really kind of was like, I was out. Like,
one sort of the millions.
The height of, like, Stone Cold. I'm trying to think of who else was big then. But Stone Cold bummed me out. It actually... I mean, everyone can have an opinion on wrestling. I don't know if you know. I've never talked to you about this. But, like, when I would see people wearing Stone Cold shirts, I would just be so bummed. Because to me, that was, like, the torpedo of wrestling. Like, that's, to me, when... He seems like he could be an all right guy. I don't know. But, like, as a wrestler, he had, like, no appeal to me at all. Like, the last of that era that I remember liking, weirdly enough, has become a mega Hollywood star is The Rock. Like, when he was on the... what was that... team he was a part of. It was
Nation of Domination.
Yeah, but he had like they were like basically like this weird like it was supposed to be a mimic of like I don't even know if I want to say Black Panthers, but it was something similar at first.
Yeah, well, it was like it was very much modeled on sort of like this. It was at the time that they were pushing this sort of like race baiting kind of angle where they had these the bikers, the white bikers.
Right. That's right. Yeah. But he came out of that, and it's funny because they ended up making him, well, he was a heel at first, which is why I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
But mind you, so was Stone Cold. But anyway, I just, sidebar.
It's funny because Stone Cold is considered one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Yeah, I don't, like, I think for me it was just the shtick was just so, like, comes in, stuns a guy, shotguns a beer. I was just like, I'm not with any of this. Like,
yeah.
But to each their own. Clearly I have, I'm not the demographic.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. Like, you can get back into it now, Chris. Now there's something for everyone.
I follow too much, like, sport outside of things that I don't have time, frankly.
Yeah, but this is like, imagine that, but, like, the good guys can win all the time. But, yeah, so what would be your entrance music?
Oh, God. You know, it's funny. I remember you guys talking about this, and I didn't even think about this while I was listening to the interview. I probably should have. Let me think on it for a minute.
Okay.
I'll think of something good. I always assume I'm like, oh, man. I feel like it'd be the Dictators just because it's so perfect. But I'm trying to think of other...
I would probably do, if I was like Ultimate Warrior, I'd do Plastic Bomb. Not Plastic Bomb, sorry. Is it Dismantle? No, Disintegrate. No, what's that?
Discontent?
Discontent.
Yeah. See, I did think...
And you run to the ring really fast.
The one thing I thought of, though, was Plastic Bomb is a great song. I think Death Wish Kids would be equally good.
Mm-hmm.
As far as
mm-hmm.
going through the Poison Idea catalog, I think great intro songs for wrestlers would be Death Wish Kids, is it Xerox Frustrate? I'm bad with song titles. I think that's what it's called.
I think so.
That's a great song, too. Plastic Bomb is excellent. But if I were him, because it's a long song... but maybe it wouldn't get to the point soon enough. But I love Feel the Darkness. I think Feel the Darkness would be an amazing intro song.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool, too.
Because it's got that slow build.
Yeah, if I think Vocal Test by Integrity would be cool to come out to.
Yeah, that is a good one. Yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I feel it's a good... Yeah, I don't know. That would be it's a tough one. Because I know I'll think of something later on. I'm going to just say, because of the... I always think of the Dictators, I think of wrestling. For obvious reasons, but that first song on the first LP for me would probably be my intro music offhand, which I'm terrible with song titles. I don't remember what the hell that song's called. Next Big Thing, I think?
Yeah, Next Big Thing.
Anyway, what about you? What's yours? Did you say in the interview? I can't remember.
I mean, it's probably be a 16 song, maybe right up there.
You know what's funny? Actually, Fucked Up would be good. What was the Fucked Up song someone used?
Brian Danielson, a.k.a. Dan O'Brien, a.k.a., you know, one of the best of all time, Chris, used Generation twice.
Yeah, that's classic. Generation.
We were supposed to do a wrestling theme for Taylor Wilde, too, when she was in TNA Wrestling, but they turned us down because of the name.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're already digressing.
Okay. Oh, God, Chris.
Sorry to yelling, folks.
Oh, man. I tell you, these kids being in a water park all day will really strain the shit out of your energy. Okay. Let's get into the next point. It's your point, Chris, because I did my point.
Okay. I need to see the list here. It's hard to see. First of all, I'd just like to say I was very impressed with his amount of knowledge. I didn't expect him to be this deep on some stuff, specifically like the 90s straight edge centric stuff.
Oh, yeah. No, he. That's the thing is, it's so cool. It's like he's like a deep head.
Yeah, totally. Oh, Lord. I don't know. There's a little tidbit about there about Unbroken. I think the only thing I want to say on that is, don't you feel the perception of Unbroken as a group has like drastically changed? Like it used to me in their time, mm-hmm. Unbroken mm-hmm. was like the big deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like the most, but maybe not the most solid choice is not the way to say it, but like it was definitely like an in vogue group, so to speak, of
yeah.
their era. And I feel like, you know, whatever on now, decade, a little more than decade, maybe 15 years, I guess.
Yep.
And it seems like that has not aged that way for people. I don't think the young folks are feeling Unbroken really in that regard.
Yeah, you're right. Like, I don't know if they're not as in vogue as they once were.
I mean, you know, let's...
But that
let's,
whole... Any sort of dark hardcore and punk like that isn't as popular as it once were.
Yeah, true. I'm just thinking, like, we talked last week, I believe, about Charles Bronson.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you take those two groups, for example, I think, like, Charles Bronson, I equally think does not get enough credit in the modern zeitgeist, personally, right now. But, like, Unbroken, definitely, like, not at all from my, whatever, experiences in recent years. Anyway.
I guess the record still goes for a lot of money. That's my thing on Discogs.
Yeah,
the record still goes a lot for a lot of money. They're not, I don't know...
I'm not trying to say people don't entirely. Just from what I notice, it's just not as...
But who is a band that is, like, from that era that, you know, this...
That still gets the big rep?
Yeah.
Hmm.
I guess Judge, maybe?
Yeah, I think... Well, Judge technically is a little earlier still, though.
Yeah, but I mean, like...
Well, Judge never won... Like, Judge is like, yeah, there. That's always going to be Integrity. Although I think Integrity has... morphed so much, but I think the Integrity, the Golden Age Integrity lineup is always highly revered.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And actually, if anything, it speaks to the other point, which, you know, arguably later Integrity is not people's favorite, and yet they still retain that infamy in a good way as far as sonically what they do.
I like the later Integrity, you're right.
I like
you're
it too,
right.
But
it doesn't,
you know,
you're
it's
right.
not the same animal.
I guess there's more to sink your teeth into with Integrity. There's like
yeah.
more to kind
yeah.
of dissect than
True.
There is Unbroken, but you're right. They aren't, you know, they're not like they once were. But Chris Callahan's still got the tattoo, so.
He is. He's keeping it alive.
He's keeping the love alive for
yeah.
Unbroken. No, I think they're still, but I guess what you're saying.
Like, I like Unbroken just fine, but what I mean is I just find it bizarre that they were the band for a minute, I would say, of that era, and then it just seems to not have lasted as strong or something. I don't know.
It happens, right? Like,
yeah.
you know, like, it definitely, people's tastes change, or the next wave of kids isn't as excited by something, so.
Yeah.
Okay, my point.
Yep.
I think I would like to go to X-Files X.
I was kind of hoping you would. I do like this band as well. I have a theory.
What was your theory?
About how, because your point in the interview was something to do with how, like, this band is underrated and, like, I don't know, people don't know about the records or something. For me, it's the name. Like, it sounds
yeah.
stupid to say,
yeah.
but it really is. Like, if that band had just been called, I don't know, something more, like, angry generic without the X's, I think they would, I don't know, get a bit more...
It wasn't a TV show pun, too.
Yeah, like, the TV show pun and, like, that whole thing. It's like, that is so... Like, that era had those things, those kind of hallmarks, which is, like, so weird to me now, because bands aren't doing that at all.
Mm-hmm.
Thankfully anymore, but I'm with you in terms of the band's quality is definitely there, but yeah, I think I honestly think the name makes people not like look it up or listen to it.
Didn't they have like a record, like a 7-inch called like Message Board Mayhem too?
Like, I don't know. That's a comp, I think, but I don't
okay,
know.
Maybe
if,
it was
I don't think it's
they had
them.
Some like I think they had some 7-inch that had some real goofy title too.
Yeah, it's like it doesn't. And for me, like it doesn't really match the music either. Like the tone of like the branding, so to speak, doesn't really match the
yeah
ferocity of the music.
Yeah,
it'd be like Infest being called, I don't know, like X hot dog X or something. It just doesn't make any sense. Like, anyway.
Brendan's got, like, one of the coolest voices in the history of music. Yeah. Like, he's got, like, such a crazy range to do that, and then also, like, the Lovely Lad stuff.
Yes. And it's funny, too, because, again, yeah, he is, I'd love to hear him on this. I really hope you interview him one day.
I would love to have him on this.
Yeah, he's great. But all of his bands, too, I've liked. But, yeah, it is funny. Like, I forget that.
Yeah.
You're like, even you just saying it now, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's right. Not to mention Rival Mob, for the younger folks who might not know. Rival Mob, same singer. But, yeah, totally right. His range is crazy. I remember they played, I don't even remember which group it was. I want to say it was Rival Mob or... Anyway, he fronted the group, and they covered Danzig, and it was flawless.
Where was that?
It was they played with you guys. I think it was either a Fucked Up Weekend.
That was Soul Swallower.
Or Soul Swallower, yeah. They covered... Oh, God. But it was perfect. Like, he literally sounded exact. He had the crazy vocal range. It was perfect.
Yeah, no, he's got an incredible voice.
Yeah. So, anyway, X-Files, I think it's the name. That's my theory. And great man.
You're right on the name. Okay, your turn.
All right. You skipped over a couple things here. There was something I was tipped on earlier. You know, obviously I love the Tear It Up shout-outs. I think we shout out Tear It Up a lot on this show, so it's... there was... Oh, man. I don't know this band, but I want to... Did you ever find anything out about more about that Thin Line Fading?
Someone told me that they did not like them very much, but I don't know if that's reflective on them, their sound and stuff. But
was Dave involved in that or no?
No. It was some other members of Tear It Up.
It was just the moment of clarity. I was curious.
And Reign Supreme and...
Yeah, yeah.
And like someone else, actually. There's like a bunch of people that were in other bands after that.
Gotcha. Okay.
They're like one of those bands, it seems, that like...
Yeah.
You know, a lot of different people from different points went off into...
Gotcha, okay. So that's, I don't know, my point, but, guess skip down a bit. There was something else. X-Files, that's funny. Yeah, okay, I guess, well, one thing in the interview I thought was really good. Yeah, actually, I don't know anything about this, so we'll talk about this, because you can inform me.
Mm-hmm.
This Piss Jeans and Chikara, like, I don't know Chikara at all.
Chikara is like a pro wrestling company that we mentioned briefly, but they kind of like... favor like a real like high flying style, but they've also had like a lot of like other people come through. It's like one of the bigger American indies.
So what?
And Piss Jeans guys were involved in the beginning of it, and some of the guys used to wrestle in it.
Oh, okay. Because the only, and it was funny, it never came up on the show to my knowledge, or the interview, pardon me, but like his favorite wrestler being Ultimate Warrior, and you guys didn't mention.
Oh, the Ultimate Warriors. I know, we should have. I've got like, I've been talking to someone in that group about coming on the show for a while now, and it just hasn't happened. But, yeah, one of the best record finds I think I've ever had is I was in this record store randomly. Where was that? Seattle? I don't even remember where I was. Somewhere in America.
Yeah.
And I was in this record store, and they had an Ultimate Warriors test press.
Nice.
And it was a Jughead's Revenge LP
nice.
Jacket with a test press inside. So excited to get it,
checked
Chris.
Off two boxes for you. Oh, my gosh.
Hit two amazing marks right there.
Yeah, agreed. But I really like Piss Jeans, so I like them mentioned in the episode. But also, I guess, are they a New Jersey area band? I don't know where they're from.
Like Philly. Allentown.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because they were Gay Crashers. Remember the Gay Crashers?
Yeah, I know that, yeah.
And that they were also like the Double Decker guys. They got all the good records at Double Decker.
So I didn't know anything there because the Chikara, I thought, was a group. I was like, I didn't hear about this other band. I didn't know about it, but okay. That makes perfect sense.
You know, Chikara's a pro wrestling company. Gotcha. But Ultramantis Black, Chris, is another straight-edge vegan wrestler.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. There's a lot more people that you should identify with lifestyle-wise than in that... sport you watch where they kick around that ball.
Yeah, but at the same time, I don't know. Like, I don't have to identify with people that are similar to me just because they're similar to me.
I know, but I just can't believe... I don't know how you could cheer for people that are probably the opposite of you. You know, like, it's like...
I don't cheer for them all. I cheer against many of them.
Yeah, okay.
The vast majority, in fact.
But I guess you need your own douchebag to fight the other douchebags.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I understand. Kinda.
So I think that was my point.
Okay.
Whatever I said there.
Mine is Eperfest. Have you played Eperfest?
No. That
really?
Was either... No, we didn't.
Yeah.
So what... when you went, like, what fucked up era was this that you played it?
I think they played it without me, with the beep.
The first beep. Time?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we played it.
So that would have been like 2007 or 8, probably?
Yeah, and then I think we played it before David Comes to Life came out.
Wow.
Just before.
I mean, if we played it, I would be shocked that I'm not aware, but I don't recall. Like, it's in Europe, right?
So yeah, it's like a huge... It's a huge...
Yeah, so we did not. We didn't play anything like that I'm aware of. We did play Europe, but not that.
I guess, your turn.
All right. So, one point I want to mention is, because you have the connection via this gentleman, via you being label mates.
Yes.
But I have arguably a closer connection that I found out listening to the interview, which is he played in Black Kites. The drummer of Black Kites went on to be in, as he mentions in the interview, Hounds of Hate, Cream, Concealed Blade, a bunch of other bands. But his name is Jay. Jay actually played drums for Urban Blight on a tour of the West Coast. Yeah. So technically speaking, Jeff Cannonball and I have, like, technically shared the same drummer.
You're, like, 1 degree of separated.
1 degree, yeah, 1 degree away.
And also it made me realize that Urban Blight's, like, another one of those bands in Toronto. With, like, I guess one original member.
Would have been... Two. Well, that tour, yeah, it's hard to say. Like, technically, you're right. It would have been two. Would have been Jason and Beav, but...
Didn't Jason leave at the end?
Yeah, Jason... No, he never left, but there was always issues with touring.
Yeah, there was always issues.
So that's why Jay played with us and whatever. But, yeah, you're right. The original... We're the Career Suicide of the Heart... Well, Career Suicide, well,
except,
Heart Cup Punk
Band. Except there was Beav the whole way through.
This is true, but what I mean is, what I was trying to pat myself on the back with, and no disrespect to anybody who was in the band previous, but the Career Suicide, certain lineups of a certain era are more golden, so
that's true, that's true.
And I think when people will look back with that glint in their eye, it will be the era of later, not the earlier.
You were the definitive lineup.
Well, I'm not saying it, but...
Like, not like the... I thought it was, like, it was cool when it was the Cancer Bats and Beav.
Well, it would have been pre-Cancer Bats then, but yeah.
I think the Cancer Bats were going.
No, they were not.
They weren't? Like, when Liam was on drums? Yeah, the 7-inch should come out, no.
It would have been... It wasn't... It was around that same time, but Urban Blight, I believe, predates Cancer Bats entirely. Pretty sure.
I think he already had another lineup before that, too. I think Liam was just filling in on drums because Jason couldn't make it.
Well, they were both in... This is funny we're talking about this. But anyway, they were both in... Was it Shipwreck?
Or
The Choice. I can't remember which one. No, The Choice was Jonah. But anyway, there was a band that... These cedar bands, as I normally like to call them, that... So, like, Liam and Beav were in a band... that kind of led to Urban Blight eventually, which is why Liam played on the tour.
Oh, yeah, it was United Youth Crew.
No, that was another
person. United. It was the band that did the split with United.
I think it was Shipwreck, I'm pretty sure. And then...
Shipwreck's the one with
X. It's not X Shipwreck.
With Bickle.
No, that was the... Oh, Bickle might have been. Bickle, I can't remember. Shipwreck. But either way, I have the demo. I'm sure you do, too.
Yeah, I have the demo.
We'd have to look it up. We don't have it. We're not... Damien's not in his room to check right
no,
now.
No, I can't look in front of me.
You didn't bring your demos with you?
I should have. I should bring all my shit with me.
Anyway, this is neither here nor there, but yes, whatever. I don't remember how we started talking about Urban Blight, but anyway. Oh, yeah, I brought it up. That's right, with the Jeff Cannonball connection.
Shared lineage.
That's right. And Jay is a very good man, and I thought that was cool. It was funny learning things in interviews that you'd think you would, you know, already know of, but yeah, wasn't aware at all.
No, Jeff, I think that's the thing is, like, I knew this. I knew before we started this podcast that Jeff would be one of those people that united a bunch of really disparate kind of worlds.
Yeah. Well, you have Tear It Up. You have Piss Jeans connection. You have that weird connection, which I have a direct connection to. Like, I would never have thought that based on, like, you mentioning the guys in wrestling. I'd never in a million years. Anyway.
All right. Well, I guess, should we do one more?
Yeah. Pick one and then we'll...
Oh, man, what should we do?
There's a lot of stuff talked about in the interview. I just wanted to make sure we hit all those, like, weird little points.
I know, there's so much stuff to get to, but as normally goes, Chris, we are recording very late.
Yeah.
And we're in the parking lot of a hotel.
It's true. I think we've done a good job, though, highlighting most of the weird, obscure...
I, I guess the only thing we have left to talk about is the idea that punks are and juggalos are like one and the same.
Yeah, this is your longtime theory, so you love this.
I wrote a blog about this and got death threats after it, so I will try and make the theory. And I mean, literally, I did get death threats out of it.
From juggalos, though, or from punks?
Juggalos.
Wow.
I don't think I was being anti...
No, not at all. I remember vaguely reading it. I don't recall it in great detail, but you have been persistent with that for a very long time.
Yeah.
That sort of, I don't remember if your blog thing mentioned, but you were basically saying that the Juggalos are the new punks legitimately because they're hated by everybody and they're their own thing and they've created their own world. I can't argue that, but, it's not my thing. I also vehemently disagree with you and Jeff that Homies is a good song, but
what?
I don't like anything they've ever done.
Like I think right now that came on, Chris.
Yeah, even with the interview, I could say I was listening to the interview with someone else, and as you're saying that, the whole time just like no, I was saying it like as I was listening.
But they were like, yo, let's put on Homies after this. No, legit, Chris.
They were not
Homies.
They were humoring my like. Wow, you don't like this. And I'm like, no,
yeah, don't. And then they were like, okay, better not tell them that I think it's a sick song, too.
Yeah, maybe. That's exactly right. Anyway. Not my thing. But, yeah, you have a point.
I guess...
I find it funny that Juggalos were upset about that. Well, like, I think that's, like, the ultimate compliment. Death threat,
it was like this, like, you better watch it.
No, but I think that, like, honestly, I think that's the ultimate compliment.
So do I.
Like, that's it really is. Like basically saying, like, you're the only real subculture left is basically what you're saying to them.
Well, I'm saying, and at the time, this is a while ago.
Yeah.
They were probably the most maligned.
Yeah. I don't think that's changed. Do you? That world is, to me, is the same. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Like, I would say of, like, inconsequential music stuff, yeah, definitely they're still the most maligned. Yeah. Like, we live in this weird world where so many people have been turned into, you know, made into to scapegoat for society's problems, or like, sure, it's a lot. Yeah. It seems like the stakes are a lot higher than they were in the early 2000s. Yeah, when I could write this.
Fair enough. You're right, because they even have the what is it? They're considered a gang by
the FBI now and stuff. Yeah.
Anyway, this is an interesting topic, but yeah, you've been a long time. You've said that. I can't argue you. You're not incorrect. I just fail to acknowledge it as a stubborn purist of thoughts on punk and subculture.
Oh, I got to get Kevin Gill on this podcast. Kevin Gill can break it all down.
There you go, yep.
Imagine the Human Furnace was the influence of the Juggalo.
That would be wild. There's got to be links. I mean, there's definitely things, flyers of them playing with, like, Cold as Life. And so there's definitely exposure.
There's flyers of them playing with Cold as Life?
Yeah.
Holy shit, would that show been like?
There's definitely, like, it's they, in some capacity, have had some exposure to these kind of things. Like, they've intermingled. Of course, I wouldn't say, like, that's, like, it's just proximity, I would imagine, right? Mm-hmm. Regionally, they're in the same area. But, yeah, I'm guessing it was the early 90s. Anyway.
I mean, a weird, sketchy show.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh my god.
Yep. If anyone can find the flyer too, send it in to us.
Yeah, please actually. Send it in
the
flyer.
I've definitely seen it. I remember being on the road and randomly, it was in Olympia, Washington, of all the places. If this person listens to this, please send it. But he had his phone at the time, a smartphone, and he was, I don't know why, he was talking about this guy after the show, showed us, like he said, mentioned that, and I thought, yeah, wow, that's crazy. And he showed the actual flyer, like on his phone, like a capture of it. Anyway,
so, yeah, if you're listening, please send that in.
Yeah, please. turnitupunkfootnotes@gmail.com.
All right, there's a lot more to get to, but we will get to that in future episodes. Jeff will be back for part two, so we'll get to that in all the part twos. But in the meantime, if you haven't yet, please go to vice.com and watch Bloodlust Tournament of Death. It will blow your mind, and is a great companion piece to watching, to listening to the Jeff Cannonball episode of Tournament of Punk. And if you want to get in touch with me, hit me up on various forms of social media, @LeftForDamien. Once again, please go over and buy your tickets to the Turn Out of Punk live tour that's happening on the East Coast of the United States, starting December 12th. And, yep, get your tickets for that, and hopefully Chris will be able to make it.
Yes.
And I think that's it, right, buddy?
Yeah, I'm good.
All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for listening, and we will see you next week. This has been awesome, buddy. Live.
Yeah, for once, yes.